Tolstoy once said, "As long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields." Welcome to episode 49 of Our Hen House, a place to find our way to change the world for animals. In today's episode, we will tell you about my unfortunate encounter with a leather dog collar and the hell that ensued thereafter. Joining us today are two of our favorite change makers, Bart Potenza and Joy Pearson, the couple behind the best vegan restaurant on the planet, Candle 79, and of course, the absolutely delectable Candle Cafe.
Yum.
Joy and Bart will tell us about how a winning lottery ticket was the green light for them to start their vegan empire. They'll also share relationship advice, business advice, and a whole lot more. For our review section, our Hollywood correspondent, Ari Solomon, is back once again, this time to give us the vegan skinny on the big Hollywood PETA holiday party. All that, vegan banter, and of course, current events from the world of animal rights. My name is Jasmine Singer, and I'll be your co-host today in our henhouse, along with my stevia plant, Marianne Sullivan.
Ooh, yeah.
Now please, pull up some hay. Let's get squawking. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Marianne Sullivan.
Hello, my little Satan piccata.
Oh, God.
What higher compliment could I give you?
There is none. Thank you, and I love you, too. And that's a wrap. I'm just kidding. Satan piccata.
Yum.
That was kind of mean. Do you know when I juice fast, I actually have dreams about Candle 79's Satan piccata?
That's bad.
Like, I actually, even when I'm not juice fasting.
Is Satan good for you or bad for you or in between?
Yeah, I guess it's in between. It's a little bit processed, so that's probably not good.
It's made out of white flour, isn't it?
I don't know if it's made out of white flour.
I think that's how you make it.
It's made out of, I thought, wheat.
Yeah, well, white flour is made out of wheat.
Huh. Interesting. We'll have to look into that. But I guess it partly depends on how you prepare it, too.
Well,
the Spork girls who were on our podcast recently, they make their own seitan. I would like to make my own.
We should try making our own.
Yeah. So I have a story.
I think it's quite a process.
I have a story for you about a dog collar.
Oh, not this story.
You've heard it.
You're obsessed. Well, come on. With this dog collar.
You've heard it before, but our lovely listeners have not. And I want to share it, if for nothing else, for the emotional satisfaction of knowing that I vented.
Of whining.
It's true.
Yeah, well, it was an annoying story.
It's just so basically.
Be prepared to be annoyed.
I was. Hopefully not at me. I was at an event, a dog and cat event. I'm not going to name any of the names of the organizations here because I don't want to get, like, sued.
To protect the innocent. Right. The incident? The innocent.
Right. So I was at a dog and cat event, and there was a table at the event, and it was, you know, this organization that was at the event, and they had a bunch of really adorable little collars for dogs, and they were bright pink with these rhinestones on them, and they were totally tacky, and I was like, oh, you know, made me think Rose needs a new collar. And so I noticed there was
Rose
a raffle.
Rose would look so unbelievably cute mm-hmm. with a pink collar with rhinestones. Her collar now is a little
ratty.
It's a little butch. She needs a little feminizing.
Yeah, everyone thinks she's a boy.
I know, and she's such a delicate, feminine little flower.
And by boy, I don't mean B-O-I. I mean actual, like a boy dog.
Well, one or the other. You would think she was a lesbian. You really would. She's
but
so
she
butch,
likes the
but
boys.
She likes the boys.
Right. She does
she
not
sure
take
does.
After us in no. that way. No. So anyway, there was a raffle.
She does lift her leg when she pees, though.
TMI. There was a raffle to win a free collar, and I thought, okay, you know, why not? You just put your name on this list to be on their mailing list, and they'd randomly draw a winner, and you could win the collar. And it said next to it, animal-friendly collars. And I thought, oh, cool. And the guy who was talking to me, who worked at that organization, was like, animal-friendly collars.
Speed it up, honey.
And so I, you know, won the collar. I guess I'll skip the part where I put my name down and walked home. I won the collar. And I told them I have a pit bull. She has an enormously large neck.
Oh, is that how you put it? That's so mean.
Well, she's got a gigantic neck.
She has a very handsome, substantial
neck.
Strong neck.
Otherwise known as a huge neck. And
it is hard to get collars that she can't slip out of because her neck is kind of bigger than her skull.
That's such a weird visual. So
fortunately, she has those enormous ears. That's true.
The collar came in the mail, and it was this teeny tiny little collar for like a baby poodle or something. And I'm like, oh, geez. So I emailed them. It took them like months to get back to me, literally. Not good customer service. But eventually they said, all right, well, we'll switch it out for another one. This was months after the event. So I'm going to meet the guy that I was talking to switch my animal-friendly collar, and I take the hot pink cute little collar with the rhinestones, and I go to put it in my bag, and I notice that the tag said something leather, and I was like, what? Leather? It said it was animal-friendly. So I called him, and I'm walking to meet him, you know, and I have the collar in my bag, and I'm like, I have a question. You said that these were animal-friendly collars, so clearly I'm missing something, because this says leather. And I checked to make sure it wasn't just the company that was like a leather company that maybe makes non-leather collars, but no, the leather was what the collar was made out of. So the guy I spoke with said, well, yeah, it's leather. It's from upstate New York. And I'm like, oh, it's from upstate New York.
What does that mean? I don't even... Was he implying that that means it's not cruel?
He was implying that it was from some little farm.
Yeah, we don't have any cruelty in New York State.
And so I was like... and then he started...
And anyway, that was such a lie. How would he know where it's from?
He started to get testy and mean, like, immediately. And I'm like, well, listen, as an animal activist, I would never use leather because I care about all animals, including the cows who are used and exploited and murdered to make the leather. And he was like, what? No, I can't eat meat. You're telling me I'm not allowed to eat meat. And I'm like, you went there. You went to the meat argument, not me. And you obviously can choose to do whatever you want to do. But whether or not that's animal friendly is another story altogether. I don't understand why you would tout this as being animal friendly when it's made out of dead animals. And so he was like, so wait, now you're telling me I can't wear
leather?
Sounds
like your brother, doesn't he?
That's my voice. So he said, now you're telling me I can't eat meat? Now you're telling me I can't eat leather? And then he goes, why are you trying to put my company in such a bad light? And I'm like, look, you obviously don't know that much about leather production. I'd be happy to share some footage with you about it. And in fact, I think you'd be interested to know that there are cruelty-free versions of what you're, you know, giving away these collars. There are lovely vegan, I didn't actually say the word vegan, but I said there are lovely animal-friendly collars available, and I'd be happy to send you a few ideas. And, you know, he was like, he goes, well, now you want to show me some eco-friendly leather? I didn't think there was a such thing. And I'm like, well, first of all, there's not. And second of all, I never said anything about leather. I'm not going to put my rescued dog in a dead animal. He was just getting so snotty and awful about it.
Well,
and
you pushed his buttons.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to say
he thought he was doing a good thing, and then somebody revealed to him that it mm-hmm. wasn't a good thing. And
well, he said, "Well, why are you doing this to me? I give my time at shelters, and I donate these collars to shelters."
There you go.
And I said, "That's wonderful." And by the way, I just want to say that I was actually not as snotty as I'm being right now. I was pretty even keel, though. You know, as he was getting mean, I was getting a little snarky, and he was getting very mean. So
finally, I just wonder what he meant by animal friendly. Did you ask him that?
You know, I did, but he never answered it, obviously. And
I'm thinking it's probably because it was a buckle collar,
not a shock collar,
right? Something else.
I think so too. It was animal friendly for the one wearing it, but not for the ones it's made out of.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was interesting how he kept saying, "So now I'm not allowed to eat meat," and I'm like, you know,
yeah.
Like,
well, he raised his defenses. I think sometimes those are the most promising encounters. It's the people who, you know, as I always say, the people who just kind of agree with you and then move on. Mm-hmm. You're never going to reach them. But this guy obviously had defenses all over the place. Mm-hmm.
And I was passing a thrift store as I was on the phone with him, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to... I wanted to throw it out, but obviously the animal's already dead. So I'm like, I'm just going to drop it off at this here thrift store. And he said, you're going to drop it off at a thrift store? My company bought that collar. And I'm like, and I'm going to drop it off at a thrift store.
No, but you won it. That's ridiculous.
I know.
It was yours.
Oh, he was so awful, and I got off
sweetie,
the phone.
I think you overreact to these things. I mean, people are going to react.
Well, I don't think I overreact. I mean, it's...
Well, I mean, by getting so hurt.
I don't know if hurt was the word. I was a little shaken by it just because, you know, he was... You know, as I'm on the phone with him, I'm passing all these leather coats and leather bags and things, and I'm thinking, okay,
yeah,
gross.
He lives in the mainstream.
However, these leather coats and leather bags, they're at these stores on, you know, in Soho, in the Village. They're not at companies that are, you know, saying that they love animals. It's a little different, don't you think?
It is different, though. The effect is certainly the same. And people who care about companion animals don't necessarily have the same raise in consciousness about farm animals. And they can be expected to have the same angry reactions as anybody else. It's unfortunate, but we all know that's true. But then some people who deal with companion animals are incredibly enlightened. So you just have to keep on doing it and try not to let them get you upset. And know that whenever you provoke that anger in somebody and that strong reaction, and he's the one who immediately went to meet, so you know he's thought about it before, or it was right below the level of consciousness, you know, bothering him somewhere. So maybe you did some good.
Well, I'm glad.
And then you
got to
move
on
and not tell me the story ever again, because
no,
I've already heard it 492 times.
I do
want to
say I'm glad I said something.
I'm totally glad you said something.
I think it's important for people
who
should
always say something.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we need to do, and don't be, you know, a snarky asshole about it, but say it if you feel like you can. I hope that you can. Maybe an email is better, but we need to start speaking up for this. Two people who are speaking up for animals and have been for a very long time.
In the best possible way.
Through the amazing, amazing, not only food activism, but so much more than that, are Joy Pearson and Bart Potenza, the amazing couple and couple of powerhouses behind the candles, Candle 79, which is my favorite vegan restaurant, and Candle Cafe, which is right around the corner from Candle 79. It's like a less fancy version, kind of a little more casual. I love Candle, and I'm truly honored to have Joy and Bart on. I want to find out everything from how they began to how they can forge ahead. Are you curious to hear what they have to say?
I'm just getting kind of hungry thinking about
them. And they, of
them.
Course, they make the seitan piccata, which you called me earlier.
Along with everything else that's so delicious.
Like those polenta fries. Oh, my God. All right. Enough about this. Let's talk to Joy and Bart. Joy Pearson, a nutritional counselor, is passionate about healing through great food. She met Bart Potenza in 1988, and they began developing foods and menus tailored to the nutritional needs of their ever-growing devoted customer base. They have since created Candle Cafe, Candle 79, a growing catering and wholesale business, and their best-selling Candle Cafe cookbook. Joy serves as a board member of the New York Coalition for Healthy School Food, Wellness in the Schools, and the Green School Alliance. Joy's quest is to educate people on farm-fresh, plant-based options that are beneficial to their health and the well-being of the planet and future generations. Bart Potenza has been in the health food restaurant business for close to 30 years and has written and lectured on diet and health since the mid-1970s, including through the Candle Cafe cookbook. Bart has become a major spokesperson for the health food industry, and his two restaurants have grown into destination locations for all discerning diners. Bart works hard to put his best into the world, and his commitments to feng shui, luck, and karma have resulted in two beautiful eateries, two books, and one impressive life. Welcome to our hen house, Joy and Bart.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're happy to be at your house.
So happy to have you here in our hen house. We just love you guys. We're so excited. You've been on our wish list for people to interview since the very beginning. So it means a lot to us that you're coming on and joining us today. Now, for those of our listeners who aren't lucky enough to have visited your restaurants, let's start there. Joy, can you give us a brief rundown of the style of the restaurants and the kind of food that you offer?
Yes. We have two restaurants. One is Candle Cafe, and that's a more casual setting. And it's delicious, organic, vegan cuisine served in a relaxed atmosphere. And that has been open for how many years, Bart?
We're in our 17th year now.
Wow.
And I'm only 19, so that's incredible.
Amazing. You were very precocious.
I was. And the other restaurant is called Candle 79, and that is what we call the sexier sister. Mm-hmm. And she is 7 years old. And we're very proud to have an upscale, organic, vegan dining establishment, which is really clubby and... It's just the food, as you both know, is quite extraordinary. We're raising the vegan bar. It's got a full liquor license where we serve organic spirits, and we also have organic wine and beer and sake cocktails. Mm. And it is just a gorgeous environment where a lot of people love to celebrate special occasions, and it's really quite beautiful and quite magical and quite sacred what goes on at Candle Cafe and Candle 79.
Yeah, we can attest to that. Not only is the food fabulous, but as you said, the atmosphere is just, it's like coming home to go to one of your restaurants. It's really a wonderful feeling.
It really is.
So, Bart.
The highest compliment.
Oh. Thank you.
Bart, what is your philosophy of food,
Bart man?
My personal one.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I just had a piece published in the book called Creating a Meal You Love. Mm-hmm. And it was all about restaurateurs like myself. In fact, I think I was the only vegan restaurateur in the whole book.
That's great. I love that you were there.
You know, and briefly for me, you know, it's funny because I've been in the field 26 years now, but I think my Italian-American heritage planted major seeds for me when I was a young person without realizing it. Mm. As I mentioned in the article, I had 9 aunts and uncles on both sides of my family, and each household had its own distinctive cuisine.
Wow.
Because back then, they nor I were vegans. But there was definitely a sense of food and the appreciation of food. And, of course, a fine red wine, which I made with my grandfather.
Wow, that's
but,
so cool.
But I think what happened with Joy and myself is that when we became united to create these restaurants, the joke I often make is we wanted a place to eat ourselves, and happily 15,000 people a month showed up.
That's convenient. That's just so great. How interesting to blend your background and into what you do now. It sounds like you really do bridge the two. And I mean, I have a bit of an Italian heritage as well and a Jewish one. So food is a very important part of my ancestry. And I can taste that richness when I eat at Candle 79. I hear what you're saying.
The Candle Cafe cookbook is dedicated to our mothers and grandmothers who taught us that food equals love. And that's why I think it's also so special that through the food at the Candles, you can feel really being loved on so many levels, considering it being compassionate.
It really is true. It does definitely exude love. I think that's a really nice way of putting it. Now, you also have a catering and a wholesale business. Joy, can you tell us a bit about that?
We have a very active catering department, and we love to get food out there so that everybody can experience what great food is at an event. Mm-hmm. So it also turns a lot of people on, and it's actually, people can't believe it's vegan when we do an event. So that's great, our catering division. And we're also out there right now with 5 desserts in Whole Foods markets.
That's fabulous. That's
so it's really very exciting. Good. We really want to make vegan food accessible to everybody and delicious.
Yeah, well, you are. And you have a crazy story of how you got your start in this business. It sounds like it might be a Meg Ryan movie, but alas, it's not. Although I would like to see Meg Ryan playing you Bart. Get it? Just kidding. It's even better than that. It's almost like, I don't know, like you won the lottery or something. Joy.
Yeah. Bart's got a great story.
Oh, Bart, yeah. Tell.
I'm wondering,
tell us,
wait, who's going to play me in that?
I'll play you.
Okay.
So what happened? How did you begin? Some crazy stroke of luck.
Well, in 1993, when Joy were first literally connecting with the original place that was called Healthy Candle. That was the one before Candle Cafe. Anyway, I played a lottery ticket on Friday the 13th on a hot August night. I played a combination of Joy's birthday and mine, and it came out as a winning ticket in a combination bet.
Oh, my God.
several other people won that evening on the same ticket. So we could have won $300,000, but there were several winners. So we won $53,000.
Wow.
And that was the seed money, literally and figuratively, for the Candle Cafe.
That gives me chills, and I've heard that story before, and it makes me want to cry. It's like the vegan gods were looking after not only you guys, but everyone who you've fed since then.
So agree.
Joy always says that.
It's Providence providing, because we were so committed, and we found the space, and we couldn't afford it, and Providence provided, and we raised more money from friends and family, and that's how the Candle Cafe was born.
Well, thank God. Thank God for that. Did you name it Candle 79 because I was born in 1979?
Of course.
That's what I thought.
And you were the candle burning bright in the heart of all our lives.
That was what I thought was the case.
So you guys were actually some of the first pioneers in taking vegan food from the bland into the fabulous. You know, it used to be pretty dreadful. Bart, can you tell us how things have changed since those early days?
I think the, as a cliche says, the trend is definitely our friend. We're averaging 5 to 10 media hits of one sort or another, our own and other people's, every month. I mean, recently Business Week profiled our restaurant, and people like Bill Clinton, Steve Wynn, Rupert Murdoch, you know, people who are eating our type of food, are eating vegan, mm-hmm. and these are people that can really, really spread the word. And for me, at a cultural, a food level, the relationship Joy and I have with the farmers and the chefs is personally very exciting, because the whole realm of what you can prepare and the quality of fresh food is really, it's funny, because very often people come to our restaurants because they love the food. And statistically, we don't think we're feeding all vegans, obviously. Mm-hmm. We're feeding a lot of mainstream people who just love the food.
Yeah.
And they, of course, they're improving on our vegan commitment. We don't care, because that day was saving a lot of animals when they eat with us. But I think we had to make it tasty, and I give Joy a lot of credit for that. She worked with the chefs mm-hmm. very hard in the early days, you know, just to bring it up to the level that you women seem to know about right now.
Well, it's world famous. I mean, it shows all of the work and passion you've put into it.
Yeah, and then one of the things about the way that it's grown, when I first went to Bart's restaurant, I was a customer, and vegetarian food was not particularly attractive. It was bowls of, you know, tempeh stews over brown rice.
Yeah.
And really what's happened, and I think Candle was one of the first to do it, was to take, you know, vegan food and familiarize it. Like, we did a double bacon cheeseburger, all vegan, when we first opened, with a special sauce, which was like a Russian dressing. And, you know, to do mainstream, like, stir fries and casseroles and all the mainstream flavor profiles that you would think of when you were thinking of your daily food, is the same thing we use. Our spice cabinet is ethnically so well-rounded that you can get spices from all over the world that give you flavor profiles that we're looking for in great quality food. And I think that's what's happened over the past years, that vegetarian food has taken a real leap, and it's become a cuisine. Like, one night you should go for Italian, and one night Chinese, and one night vegan, because the culinary creativity and delectability and nutrient density is so incredible that people want to come even if they're not practicing a vegetarian or vegan lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. And that's their first introduction, and it's so powerful.
Yeah, without question. And this is something that you're bringing to kids. You've been doing a lot of work around school lunch programs. Joy, can you tell us a bit about what you've been doing?
Yeah, that's my passion. What we've been doing is, I work with the Coalition for Healthy School Food, and we're in partnership with the Department of Education School Food Division. And what we've done over the years is brought plant-based cuisine into the cafeterias at schools. And our first foray into that was in a school in Harlem called the Fly School, the Future Leaders Institute. And Candle 79 chef Jorge Pineda went up into Harlem with me to cook for the kids plant-based options twice a week, every week.
I just love that.
The reception was so phenomenal, and I think it's so empowering for kids to understand about the positive impact of plant-based diet on not only their own bodies, but on the planet. And really, it's so important to educate these kids at the ages, at such a young age. So it's my passion. I love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's the most valuable thing I think you can do. Kids will eat for the rest of their lives the foods they get used to when they're young. And our whole society is introducing them to crap.
You're right.
It's so wonderful to see people who are really trying to get them started eating a healthy diet.
That's exactly.
And Marianne, you know what I believe too, that if you put, we've actually done experiments where you put a cupcake and like carrot stick, jicama sticks, you know, celery sticks, and the kids will gravitate toward the vegetables. But they've been so adulterated to believe that the other stuff has been good for them or it's a treat, that they haven't been going for the vegetables or haven't gotten the opportunity because it's not even in their neighborhoods.
Yeah, and they get addicted to those flavors. Those flavors start to drown out the more subtle flavors of real food.
Yep.
On another tack, we love your personal stories in part because, like us, it involves a very or fairly or somewhat substantial age difference. And yet you seem so well matched to each other. Bart, as the older partner, do you attribute your ability to erase that age difference to your diet?
Very good question. I've looked at it many times. Joy's look at me every now and then and said, what have I done? I kidnapped her. I seduced her with my vegan food. Well, our ongoing joke is I made her a sandwich and her life was never the same. But I must say, people are welcome to try to see me in person, but I am 73 now.
It's unbelievable.
I can't believe that.
And I have the energy of most 30-year-olds. I mean, on a given day, my body reminds me that there might be an aging process going on, but being vegan and organic, I've been vegetarian for almost 30 years, strict vegan for 17 now.
Wow.
So even it took me until my 50s, believe it or not. I try not to be too judgmental about younger people who don't get it. I didn't wake up until I was in my 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think about, I'm a little bit humble about, you know, this journey. And though the four of us right now chatting, we would love to see more people come on board with what we believe in and know. Not only what we believe in, what we know about. But
mm-hmm.
Joy and I have another philosophy. You know, it's harder to change people's food habits than their religion or their politics.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
People
really
are so inbred, the habits, but we'll save that for another show. But Joy's intrinsic energy is so appealing to me, and her open-heartedness, as you're already hearing. We've been together 23 years, and we're literally together 24-8.
Right. 24-8. I mean,
yeah, this is starting to sound familiar.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we obviously have an age difference as well, and yet I can't imagine being...
I'm actually the older one. People aren't sure which one.
A new trend. Look at that.
Exactly. And you might know this already. Marianne recently took early retirement in order to focus on our hen house and on her animal law classes.
Okay.
And this is a huge shift in so many ways, but partly it's a big shift because in addition to both of us living together in a 380 square foot apartment, we'll also both now be working together in a 380 square foot apartment.
Why do you always have to tell people the size of our apartment?
I know that your apartment is probably not as small as ours. So
maybe it's 700 square feet.
So basically, what we really want to ask is, can we move it? No, I'm kidding.
Yes,
what we wanted to know from you, our mentors in this way, and maybe our apartment isn't as small as yours, isn't as small as ours, but you've been working and living together for quite some time now. Any advice for us on how you managed to pull that off without killing each other?
I'm going to start with the joint commitment and the mission. When you take yourselves back to that, it all seems right and okay, and you get through the small stuff or the upsets or the challenges that's presented. But I think that because you have a shared mission and a shared passion and a shared activism, I think that gets you through a lot of the hard parts personally.
Yeah.
And I think communication is a great thing,
mm-hmm.
that you're, you know, because we are activists, that we're very passionate and we have a lot that we believe very strongly about. So I think it's also good to be a good listener and hear what the other person has to say.
Make sure you have a good hobby on the side, too, to keep you fresh.
Yeah. You know, and laughter,
really
too.
Oh, laughter, yeah. We try.
And you know what? It's not a perfect science by any means. And people, and bless you for bringing up the subject, people have too many preconceived ideas about everything. But, of course, how their life should look, will be, can be, shall be, rather than really living what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we have that in-the-moment thing, I think, that Joy and I share a lot.
It comes through. I mean, it comes through with everything. It comes through with your business. So what advice would you have to give to people who might want to get started in the vegan food business? So let's start with you, Joy. I would love to hear what both of you have to say on this one, though.
Well, Jasmine, I think I'm going to use your own words. I was listening to your activism speeches, and it's really like everybody can make a difference. So if it's in the food business or if it's in any business that has to do with vegan items or I just think it's like begin it, you know,
mm-hmm.
put the idea to paper, share it with people who can be inspiring and help. And I think the community for us has been so supportive. I mean, I really think that that's pushed us through a lot of hard times is the support and love of you two and, you know, our community at large.
Mm,
so, and I say, you know, dream it, begin it, And then Providence will provide and keep using the support of the community because it's a very powerful community.
It really is. I mean, you can go anywhere in the world and have family right there. It really is a powerful, powerful force. What about you, Barb? Do you have any advice?
Yeah, we've been asked this before, and I often respond by saying I think it's important to apprentice yourself to something that already exists. You know, even like we've had probably over the 25-year history that we've done this, we've had at least 8 to 10 people have gone off and opened their own businesses, started their own cake lines, whatever. I think it's important to hang with mentors, and obviously if you don't have the major financing to open your own from day one, just go and learn everything you can from people who've already done it. You know,
yeah.
I think at least 30% of our in-house staff has some kind of ambition about being in the business, opening their own, you know, or enjoying. I support them in all these endeavors. We send them to schools. We bring them to educational programs. We bring them away to the animal rights events. And I know it's just such a stream of consciousness for us. But if I had a bottom line, I'd say I would personally, because this is how I learned the business, by the way. I worked at a small retail store in the 1970s called the Health Nuts.
Oh, I know the Health Nuts. Is it the same one? That's
There's
like
four
on the...
of them in New York.
Yeah.
UN, and that opened my eyes up. And I had back then a mentor who kind of opened my eyes up back then to nutrition and health and well-being, even before I got on the vegetarian path, all of that was going on. And none of it's wasted, by the way. I think a lot of good point Joy made, and we both sort of made it a different way, was that nothing's wasted. I mean, even if you go in, you know, we always make a joke about the dishwasher being the most important person in a restaurant. He or she is.
Yeah.
Without them clean dishes coming out, you ain't got nothing.
It's a very good point. It is.
You know, we've heard so many stories like that. But Joy and I really do encourage people, by the way, because the industry is growing. And frankly, here we are 23 years later. It's our job. It's our income. I mean, you can earn a living at it. There's no deprivation. It's hard work, by the way. It's long work. I like to use the word hard, but it's a lot of time. And now you're never really away from it.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure.
We were off yesterday and today, but, you know, Joy's on the phone 10 times a day just dealing with something mostly good, but there's always an issue or two.
Of course.
You know?
And I think what you said before is anybody interested in doing their own thing, in unity there's power. I think I said that before, but maybe there's an already existing company that's doing what you're doing, like Bart said, that either you could apprentice at or join forces with. I think our vegan community needs to know that we need to support each other.
I just love your passion, and Bart, I know that you wrote a book called Look Two Ways on a One-Way Street, which I hope that people get. It's a great stocking stuffer, and it's just a great gift for anyone. It's full of your wisdom on life and love and work and just about everything. And it really is difficult to talk to each of you without noticing your amazing zest for life. And that is really, in so many ways, the essence of veganism. So thank you so much for joining us today in our hen house. And we're so happy to have you, you know, as friends and colleagues, and we look forward to eating at Candle 79 next week, I believe, and seeing you soon, I hope, and following all of the incredible life-changing work that you're both doing.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, and you too.
Thank you.
You're doing such great work. It is life-changing, and we support both of you in your journey.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care, Bart and Joy.
You too.
That was Joy Pearson and Bart Potenza from Candle 79 and Candle Cafe. And now let's get right into some news, shall we?
Some really interesting stories out of the American Veterinary Medical Association, of all places. Not, in my personal opinion, the most animal-friendly organization on the face of the earth, and certainly a lot of people share that opinion. They have actually been incredibly reactionary about progress on animal welfare issues, particularly in the farm animal arena, but in other areas as well. They have not come out against the gestation crate or foie gras, even issues in which the mainstream has spoken. They don't seem to take a progressive stance on. But recently, the AVMA Executive Board approved a recommendation from its Animal Welfare Committee
to amend the veterinarian's oath to clearly identify animal welfare as a priority of the veterinary profession. I know it probably comes as a shock to many of you that this was not before considered a priority for the veterinary profession, promoting animal welfare. But this is actually, if you know anything about the AVMA, pretty groundbreaking stuff. And now the oath that every veterinarian has to take will read, being admitted to the profession of veterinary medicine, I solemnly swear to use my scientific knowledge and skills for the benefit of society through the practice of animal health and welfare.
Wow.
The prevention and relief of animal suffering. It only said the relief of animal suffering before. Now it will say the prevention, the conservation of animal resources, whatever the hell that means, which is a little scary, the promotion of public health and the advancement of medical knowledge. This is really groundbreaking, and I think it proposes a very difficult conundrum for veterinarians who have to take this oath and are going to work for industry, which has very questionable animal welfare practices. And though the article doesn't spell it out, you can kind of sense the fact that there was a real firestorm of controversy about this, and there were a lot of people against it. And I think it's a great, great sign that the younger, more progressive elements of the AVMA are starting to take over that organization, hopefully.
Well, that is positive. I hope that people actually pay attention to the oaths that they're making, unlike people so frequently do when they take the oath of marriage.
There's actually second news out of the AVMA, maybe not directly out of the AVMA, but affecting the AVMA. I saw this in a press release from the Humane Society Veterinary Medical Association, which is an organization of veterinarians that works in a very progressive way. And it used to be the Association of Veterinarians for Animal Rights, and Humane Society sort of took it over, as it has some other small organizations, and renamed it. And they issued this press release talking about this new American College of Animal Welfare, which is being organized. And it's not entirely clear who's putting together this American College of Animal Welfare, but it's to create a college that veterinarians would be able to attend and get a degree from, or maybe not exactly a degree. It would be to create a specialty within veterinary science or veterinary certification for actual animal welfare, which there is not right now. There are other specialties, but there is not an animal welfare specialty. And they just decided that in order to attend their program and get this certification for this specialty, that their candidates for board certification will not have to sign off on a statement agreeing with the American Veterinary Medical Association's principles of animal welfare. This is not the same thing we were talking about before. This is a list of principles of animal welfare that the AVMA has had for a long time. And interestingly, the letter from the veterinarians that were objecting to having to sign off on these principles stated, the most potentially contentious of these principles is the first, which states, quote, the responsible use of animals for human purposes, such as companionship, food, fiber, recreation, work, education, exhibition, and research conducted for the benefit of both humans and animals, is consistent with the veterinarian's oath. And obviously there are people who are interested, veterinarians who are interested in pursuing this specialty, who don't necessarily think that the responsible use of animals for all of these ridiculous purposes is consistent with their oath, and they don't want to say it. And there's no reason why they should have to. Why do you have to sign off on a political statement in order to get a specialty in this particular area of veterinary science? And I just think this is great. I think there's so many signs that there's progress at the AVMA and among veterinarians generally. And I just like to add a quote from Deborah Teachout, who's one of the people who is considering applying for this board specialty and had trouble with this issue. Quote, there is a critical need for our profession to establish a specialty that recognizes all leaders in the field of animal welfare science, not just those who agree with certain welfare principles. So go Deborah, and go vets. I'd love to see vets just take the lead on all of these issues.
Some scary stuff going on in Missouri, though.
Yeah, really scary. Apparently, there's going to be legislation introduced in January in Missouri that will seek to nullify the just passed Proposition B vote on regulating puppy mills. And it's just, I just can't believe it. It's just a disgrace. Like people voted. It was given to the people. Do we live in a democracy or don't we? It was given to people. They voted for it. And now they're going to introduce legislation to try to erase it. They don't even try to create the illusion that this is a democratic process and that industry doesn't own the legislature. It's just a disgrace.
It's also a disgrace in Kentucky, where Noah's Ark theme park is being planned.
Yeah, this is a crazy story. There's this, not only is it being planned, but it's being scheduled for some government benefits, which all tourist-related job-creating parks would be eligible for. But this one happens to have a very religious theme, though of course the governor who is promoting it says it's not really a religious theme. But it's Snoha. I mean, how much more religious than you get? And, you know, I wouldn't care. Like, if they don't want to separate church and state in Kentucky, well, you know, I might find it objectionable, but it's not my problem. But they're going to have real animals in this ridiculous thing, and it's just going to be a horror. And it just makes me crazy. I wonder if they even know that this will be regulated by the Animal Welfare Act and they will have certain requirements. One of the things that particularly offended me, I mean, actually the article doesn't even talk that much about animals, so it was just one of the brief references. They're going to make the ark by Amish builders who will use wooden pegs and timber framing to be absolutely accurate. And then animals will be kept in pens on board, including giraffes, but only small young giraffes, because I guess they don't want to use the space to make it big enough. And it just reminds me of that giraffe who was kept in the State Fair in Dallas that you saw. They're obviously not going to have enough room to do anything. Will be kept in pens on board. How can that comply with any sort of regulation about how animals should be kept? This is just disgusting.
And that was our news.
Joining us once again for our review section is our Hollywood correspondent, Ari Solomon.
Welcome back to our hen house, Ari.
Hi, ladies. Good to be here.
Our Hollywood correspondent. Do you, when you talk to us, do you wear dark sunglasses?
Absolutely. I wear dark sunglasses and I'm sitting out by the pool with a martini.
That's what
perfect.
I thought.
Awesome.
That's what I figured.
That's the LA in
and you
my
can
head.
And you can see the Hollywood sign, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I'm going to have to manifest that pool. Eventually it'll be there, I'm sure, one day.
Awesome. So you were at a very exciting holiday party. Tell us about it.
Yes, it was the PETA Christmas. Well, I shouldn't say it was a holiday party, all inclusive. The PETA holiday party. It was at their office, which is in Silver Lake, which is a really cool neighborhood in Los Angeles. And it was catered by Madeline Bistro, which
wanted to go there.
That restaurant is just incredible. The chef, Dave Anderson, is a true artist and genius. What he does is incredible. And the food was, of course, amazing. I mean, they had mini Big Macs, which are like, you know, it tastes just like a Big Mac. It's insane, except they're these mini Big Macs. Gourmet pizzas. He had a beet tartare. He had another thing, which was a bacon mushroom dish. So it's bacon mushrooms. He makes bacon out of mushrooms. I don't know how he does that. And they were wrapped around dates, which were stuffed with tofu cheese.
Oh, my God. Did you send us some samples, maybe, next time?
I'm going to have to. I mean, then for dessert, they had s'mores. They had brownie bombs, red velvet cupcakes. I mean, it was just insane.
Wow. So it was like a diet event, I hear.
Yeah. it was so decadent. The food was so delicious. And this is actually going to be their last party in this office, because next year, PETA is moving to a huge new space in Los Angeles in Echo Park.
That's great.
And they actually, it's really exciting, because they actually said during the event that they're going to have the most employees of any other animal organization in California when they move into this office.
Well, I had no idea.
Yeah, so they're really expanding by a huge amount. And it was, you know, it was a really cool event. I definitely saw some famous faces in the crowd. James Cromwell was there, and I'm a huge fan of his.
I love him.
Yeah, that was really cool. And one of the things that they were spotlighting during the event was they also had their 30th anniversary gala this past year. So they talked a lot about that. It was hosted by Alec Baldwin, who is another person that I love and think is hilarious.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin called Marianne once.
He did. He called me once. I saved the message.
Oh, wow.
It was about a program that we were doing at the Bar Association, and he wanted to know more about it. And I saved the message for like 5 years, and then somebody erased it on me.
That is so cool. He hosted the event. Leah Michelle from Glee was there. Pam Anderson. So it was quite the event, from what I understand. I didn't get to go to the 30th anniversary gala, but they did talk a little bit about it.
So cool.
the party was amazing, and basically about a couple hours into the party, they had a presentation where they just talked about just some of the victories that PETA has had over the year and some of the programs that they're working on. And I gotta say, there's a lot of things that PETA does that I didn't know about, and it was really inspiring to hear all the stuff that they're doing.
Well, tell us.
Sure. The presentation was hosted by Lisa Lange, and she's the VP of Communications at PETA, and I cannot say enough about her. She's the woman who you'll see on television on CNN when you know, they ask for the PETA point of view. Yeah. She's wonderful.
She's great.
Oh, she's so articulate, and she's just on top of all of the issues, and you can't stump Lisa Lange. She's incredible. She's just an amazing voice. So one of the things that really shocked me was that they said that this year there was a think tank for digital innovation that ranked PETA third, only below NASA and the White House.
Oh, my God.
In a study of public sector organizations when it comes to social media savvy and online strategy.
Wow. That's really impressive.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so it's like NASA, the White House, PETA.
Oh, my God.
I know, it's incredible. They also said they had 50 million visitors to their website this year alone.
Wow.
And they have 1 million. It's crazy. They have 1 million Facebook followers and over 100,000 Twitter followers.
Wow.
Can you get them to tweet something about our hen house, just real quick?
I was so impressed by just their reach. So they started out by saying that just yesterday NASA decided to cancel experiments using radiation on over 30 monkeys that they were going to do. It was a very cool experiment that they were going to do, and it was canceled because of pressure from PETA supporters who wrote in and said that they were appalled by this. So they were really excited about that, since that was, you know, just yesterday. They also said that 9 of the 15 biggest ad agencies in the world pledged to no longer use great apes in their ads.
Nice.
This was because of PETA pressure.
I had no idea about any of these either, Ari. That's so amazing.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, then they had some really amazing advances as far as the exotic skin trade, so alligator skin, snake skin, that kind of thing. They got a bunch of undercover footage, and they put it together, and Joaquin Phoenix narrated a little video, and it showed, it's awful, but it showed alligators being beaten with baseball bats, it showed them being skinned alive, it showed snakes being nailed to trees alive. I mean, it's just terrible, terrible stuff. And listen to this, but from this video, with this awful footage, they got Nike, Cole Haan, H&M, Victoria's Secret, Lasanza, and Overstock.com to ban all products made from exotic animal skin.
Wow, that's amazing. Those are huge victories.
And yeah, I mean, these are huge companies. I mean, I'm sure it'll save thousands, if not millions, of animals' lives. It's just incredible. They also had some really great advances with regards to wool. They got Talbots and Ann Taylor to no longer sell wool from mutilated Australian lambs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also, and this is another exotic animal trade, 26,000 animals were taken out of a place called U.S. Global Exotics. It's an animal dealer in Texas. PETA did an undercover investigation there, and this is where PetSmart, Petco, and Petland, and many other stores that sell exotic animals get their animals. But they won't be getting their animals from there anymore, because as a result of the undercover investigations, their license was revoked. The owners are on the FBI's most wanted list, and their doors are shut forever.
Oh, my God. Great. So frustrating that Petco and PetSmart I mean, especially PetSmart, that does so many wonderful things on the dog and cat issues, still are involved in that trade. And I'm glad to see at least some progress has been made.
So you said that there were some celebrities there. Was there any gossip that you brought back for us?
You know, it's PETA. So they had, you know, their ads. I don't know, but ads, like, you know, the campaigns that they do with different celebrities. There was a lot of naked celebrities.
Were they at the party naked, or were they just, like, in the posters naked?
No, I saw a lot of beautiful people, and you know, a lot of people that they're working with now are reality stars. And I don't watch a lot of reality television, so to be honest, I don't know a lot of the people. But there were definitely a lot of the people that are in their campaigns. I saw those people in the crowd, and it was just really cool. You know, they're working with all kinds of people. You know, it's not just like they're working with film stars or they're working with TV stars. I mean, they're working with sports stars, and they're working with, you know, like I said, reality TV people. And I just think it's great because I think that the more they diversify, the more people they have to reach.
Oh, for sure.
So it's really cool. You know, they're doing their, I mean, I noticed a lot of the ads were their Ink, Not Mink campaign, which I think is kind of cool, where they have people who have tattoos and, you know, they pose pretty much, you know, nude, and, you know, they're urging people not to wear fur, which I think is really great. So that was really cool. And like I said, James Cromwell was there, and I just love him to death. And, you know, it was really cool to see his face in the crowd. So that was nice.
So I know that a lot of people have issues with PETA, and it's not like we don't have issues with PETA. I feel like I have some. There's some things that they do that I'm like, oh, no. But overall, I really feel like, you know, fuck it. Look at everything they're accomplishing.
I mean, I have to say I agree with you. I mean, you know, there aren't no perfect people, except for the three of us, of course.
Right, exactly.
And you know, and there's going to be no perfect animal organization. I mean, there's obviously going to be campaigns maybe that, you know, maybe make some people uncomfortable that people don't agree with. But I think that on a whole, you can't discount all the amazing victories PETA's had for animals and the awareness that they've raised. I mean, they reach so many people, and I've heard countless amounts of people say that they've become vegetarian or vegan because of a PETA video or a PETA magazine or, mm-hmm. you know, something that they've seen. And so I think that their influence is incredible, and I don't think that we should, you know, just throw out the entire organization because of, you know, one or two things that you may or may not agree with.
It doesn't mean you can't be critical of those things. Of course you can be, but, you know, it doesn't exactly what you
appreciate
said.
The good they do, and you can disagree
and
with
a
them
lot of
things.
The people who've been on our podcast, a lot of huge people in the animal rights movement started with a PETA brochure, so you can't throw that away either.
I mean, I gotta say, it was a PETA video that first got me to learn about what was going on in factory farms.
There you go.
So, I mean, I have huge amounts of respect for them. I mean, it certainly, you know, their work changed my life and got me on this path to being an animal activist. So, I do. I mean, and I agree. Not everything that they do I, you know, agree with and stand behind 100%? No. But I do think that on a whole, they do a lot of good.
I'm excited to hear about other parties and other celebrities. It's exciting for me. I feel like I'm like 10 sometimes. When I used to play that game MASH, do you remember that game MASH, Ari? Where you would like decide where you'd be living and who you would be with. And I always was going to be living in an apartment in New York City and a huge mansion in Beverly Hills. So I have my apartment
in
New York City.
All we need is a huge mansion.
Yeah. Or, you know, like a couch would be fine. So, Ari, if you have that, then you can fulfill my MASH needs.
I do. You're welcome anytime.
Well, thank you so much for shedding light on what's going on in Hollywood. And I'm excited to hear about everything PETA has accomplished in the last year and really the last 30 years for animals.
I'm just really excited to see where they're going from here. It really seems like the tide is turning. Mm. And that's really cool. So we'll see.
That's the best possible feeling to come away from an event like that with. The idea that progress is being made and that things are starting to change.
That's right. So
that's a
great way to end our podcast today. So thank you, Ari. Appreciate that. And we look forward to hearing more reviews from you and more stories from La La Land.
Oh, well, thank you guys for having me again.
Thank you.
Bye, Ari.
And
And there you go. That was our podcast episode for today. Thank you so much to our guests for joining us and for you for listening. We really appreciate it. We really do. And if you like what you hear, please consider making a donation to our hen house. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You can make a donation easily at ourhenhouse.org. Or if you want the direct link, it's ourhenhouse.org/donate. And for the first 50 people after December 2nd, which already passed, so for the first 50 people after that who donate $25, you will receive a free copy of the book 95, which is an amazing coffee table book that tells the story of various farm animals who are now living in sanctuaries throughout the country. And it is put out by the amazing organization called No Voice Unheard. If you donate $50, you will get an ethically sourced vegan-made tote bag. I love mine, and everyone seems to be really happy with their tote bags. It makes a really good gift, too. So you could get yourself a tote bag if you donate $50, and if you donate $75, you get both, which is pretty cool. And hey, that's two gifts for Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Solstice or just for the hell of it. Why not? So you could do that on our website. In the meantime, please find us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to be in contact with us, please feel free to email us at info@ourhenhouse.org. And thank you so much. We will see you next time.